We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Overnight America continues. When you hear the term grassroots effort, normally you think of some of these politicians that have little to no budgets, but, oh, they get the people behind them. They go to the Facebook. They go to the Instagram. They get out there and they get their name out and they go door to door and they roll up their sleeves. They put on the elbow grease and then they get to work. Well, grassroots efforts may actually be a bad thing, according to a Yale professor. His name is Ian Shapiro. We're going to join him next on the show. Well, he's going to join us, I should say. We're going to talk to him about that. What has he got against grassroots efforts? Before we get to that, Mitch McConnell setting up the vote for Thursday. Could it be the end of the shutdown? Probably not. So here's Mitch McConnell.
And we now have a plan from the president that would do exactly that, and quickly, while incorporating both the bipartisan work of the Appropriations Committee and bipartisan proposals on current immigration issues. The opportunity to end all this is staring us right in the face. That's why we'll vote on this legislation on the Senate floor this week. All that needs to happen is for our Democratic friends to agree that it's time to put the country ahead of politics, take yes for an answer, and vote to put the standoff behind us.
So one of the votes will be a proposal backed by Mitch McConnell, who you just heard, to fund President Trump's border wall and reopen the parts of the government. Kind of what you heard during the address on Saturday. President Trump said, you know, fund the wall. We'll give you this when it comes to DACA extension. We'll talk about these other aspects, but you got to put the wall on before we end this thing. I don't think there's any way that the Democrats will, in good faith, actually negotiate any changes in immigration if we just open the government and say, we'll take care of it later. Let's just get the government open. Because every time we've reached a debt ceiling or every time we've got the threat of a shutdown and they said, oh, no, 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 if that's the thing that's holding you up, don't worry. We'll just keep talking about it. It's unfair to close the government down over something like this. Then what happens? They compromise and open the government back up, and there is zero negotiations on immigration policy. It is a complete stall tactic by the Democrats over and over for the past 2 years. So there's no reason to believe they'd actually negotiate after. And I think that's why this is one of the biggest stands of the Trump presidency that will have to be made. And I also want to look at this in the long-term picture. If at the end of this government shutdown, no matter how long it lingers on for, if we actually get a change in immigration policy, one for the positive, one that is actually a policy that can be enforced as opposed to one that's not being enforced, and if we actually get some border security in the form of a wall in certain areas and make it to areas where it's going to be effective, just like you saw in San Diego, that's a huge win. And to me, it's worth the government shutdown if you get those things in the end. And if you say, well, we can't do it, then we'll never do it at this point. So if you're going to look back 10,000 feet view, if that's what comes from it, at least that'll be something. Chuck Schumer, not a big fan of it, though.
It was not a good faith proposal. It was not intended to end the shutdown. The president's proposal is one-sided, harshly partisan, and was made in bad faith. You can't have a compromise when one side declares, this is what we want, and this is what you want. The president and his team have tried to spin this proposal as a reasonable compromise with concessions to Democrats. That defies credulity. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Both proposals are expected to fail. So, you know, the Democrats are going to put a proposal on, which is not really a proposal. Their proposal is no border security. We're just going to open up the government. So that's their proposal at this point. So there we are. What are we going to do? I think even if it's just the procedure of it going on, and it's definitely not fair to the people that are missing their paychecks. If you look at it as most people, when they lose their jobs, they have no security whatsoever and there's no job waiting for them, at least in this case, if there's a silver lining in all of this, It's the government workers that are waiting for the government to open back up. At least you'll get back pay and you know a job is waiting for you. That is at least the silver lining. And maybe it's a wake-up call for a lot of other Americans out there that say, well, let's say something does happen with my family. Are we at least prepared? So if we miss a paycheck, we're not in dire straits. Again, not an excuse. It's definitely not fair to these employees. So don't get me wrong. I don't like it. But ultimately, in the end, if we're just going to do the dance of no immigration policy and over and over again, we're just going to keep kicking it down the road. How many more decades do we have to do it before all people, and even including Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi types in the Democrat Party, will admit that, yes, this is an emergency? Because ultimately doing nothing, which is their plan right now, is not helping things. If you think our immigration policy is as good as it gets, if you think that we have no problems whatsoever when it comes to the southern border, if you think we have no problems with drugs coming in from other countries, if you think we have no problems with people trying to sneak into this country illegally, if you think we have no problems with the way our court system is set up in order to try to give these people a chance at amnesty, if you think we have no problems with the billions of dollars we're spending every year, the $115, $120 billion we spend a year on people who are here illegally, if you think that is not a problem whatsoever, then I understand why you would think the Democrat plan is fine. If you think there's some problems there and something needs to be done, then you should be getting to the table and talking about this sort of thing. At least you have the Republicans at this point saying, we are going to at least try to put something on the table. And they're the only ones that seem to be trying to come up with something, even if it's their one-sided way of doing it. Democrats say, no, everything's fine. Keep it the way it is. Don't like it. So that's where that stands. Coming up, I want to talk to a Yale professor, the Smarty Pants. He's a political theorist. His name is Ian Shapiro. He has a book out, and he makes the case that grassroots efforts when it comes to politics are a bad thing. Bad, bad, bad. So we're going to talk to him about that coming up next. If you want to text in, you can a little bit later in the show. How about this? I want to get to Brad Young, who I called earlier today and said, hey, this whole NFL lawsuit that the Saints players or the Saints season ticket holders are bringing up, is there any merit to that? I wanted to get his law brain on that and see what he thinks. So we'll get to that too coming up. Overnight America, KMOX.
News at the top and bottom of the hour, mornings and afternoons, KMOX.
Joining us now is a political theorist, Ian Shapiro, author of Responsible Parties, Saving Democracy from Itself. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Thanks for having me on.
You also are a professor at Yale University, is that right?
That's right.
Perfect. So you're not a big fan of grassroots efforts in politics, are you?
Well, the problem with them is that it depends on who's the grass, if you like, because... You know, everybody complains that our politics is so polarized. Mm-hmm. And in fact, politics in Congress is even more polarized than politics in the country. But one of the reasons is that primaries, which are one of the most important grassroots forms of politics, primaries, the dirty little secret about primaries is that they have extremely low turnout, and the turnout tends to be on the fringes of the parties. So you can get someone like, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez elected in New York with an 11% turnout, or, you know, Jim Jordan in Ohio with a 15% turnout. And so then what happens is the people who turn out tend to be the activists on the fringes of the parties. And the people that they pick then go to Washington, and either they compromise, which you have to do in order to govern, in which case the people who sent them there accuse them of having sold out, mm-hmm. or they don't, in which case you get gridlock, government shutdown, and so on. So when we think about, you know, giving more power to the people, the question is which people, who actually shows up and votes and participates in these grassroots movements, mm-hmm. and they tend to be people who are not very representative of most voters, even in their party, never mind in the country. And so it's not surprising that you then get very low turnout in the general elections as well, because the voters in the general elections don't generally like the candidates who've been picked in the primaries. And so you just get anger, which produces more demand for more direct control, which makes it harder and harder for the politicians in Congress to govern. And we then blame them. You know, we've made a system in which they're bound to fail, and then we blame them for failing. So we're really shooting the messenger rather than fixing the problem. In our book, Responsible Parties, Saving Democracy from Itself, proposes a series of feasible reforms which would fix that problem.
Yeah, I think a lot of people looked at grassroots as the way to fix the problem. They said, bring in some alternatives, bring in some different mm-hmm. thoughts, you know, try to break the mold that we saw.
Yep.
You know, everyone was so, you know, read off the script and just hope you get the most votes. And, you know, there was this certain formula they seemed to follow, and people started to get sick of it. In this last presidential election, you saw the Bernie Sanders of the world, and people were really wowed because he was drawing more crowds than Hillary Clinton or mm-hmm. when, you know, Bill Clinton was going around on her behalf. And then mm-hmm. you have like a Donald Trump who just is explosive on the internet, where people just can't stop talking about him, and he'll fill arenas and things. And I think people see that as an alternative to the traditional. They're appealed to that sort of thing. You think it's just mm-hmm. the fringes that are appealed to that?
Well, I think it's people are frustrated, but many more than the fringes are frustrated because we've created a system where politicians can't govern. But if you look at how many voters actually selected Donald Trump as a Republican candidate, it's about 5% of the U.S. electorate, because extremely low turnout in those Republican primaries that in which he prevailed. And so then he's the candidate, and you had an unpopular candidate in Hillary Clinton. So then people have to, you know, they have a Hobson's choice, if you like, the evil of two lessers to pick between. So I think it's a symptom of the problem that people are casting around for new solutions.
Mm-hmm.
But really what we need is politicians who can actually come up with solutions that will work.
Mm-hmm.
What Trump was proposing is not going to bring the jobs back. Protectionism is not going to work. Most of the jobs are actually going to technology, not offshore. He's a symptom of people's anger, and their anger is righteous and legitimate, but he doesn't really have solutions. And I don't think most of Sanders' solutions are likely to work either. He is also for, you know, protectionism, which economists have known for centuries that everybody just loses from protectionist fights. And we really need strategies to re-educate people who's going to be losing their jobs maybe 6, 7, 8 times over the course of their careers, given the way technology is going.
Mm-hmm.
We need feasible solutions to health care, but it's not going to be Medicare for all tomorrow, which will cost trillions of dollars. We need policies that are going to move us in those directions.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you're going to get that is if you elect politicians who are going to appeal to most voters in America, the things that most voters actually care about, rather than the things that activate the people on the fringes of the parties.
Mm. Political theorist Ian Shapiro, also Sterling Professor of Political Science at Yale University, the book out now, Responsible Parties, Saving Democracy from Itself. Something you mentioned there about technology. So when you say technology, do you mean some of the jobs are becoming automated, as in we're looking at robots and artificial intelligence taking over some of the positions? Or are you looking more or less technology jobs maybe going offshore?
Well, both are happening, but the former is the most important going forward. And this is the reason that somebody in their 20s today is probably going to change jobs, you know, maybe 6 or 7 times in their lifetime. The age of lifetime employment for one company is largely over.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really need solutions to that. We're going to need permanent systems of re-education of people. Transitional assistance when they are looking for new jobs that are going to require a retooling. You know, nobody's even talking about this, and these are the sorts of things that responsible parties would be doing, because they would be trying to address the long-term interests of voters and not their immediate rage and anger with slogans and populist quick fixes that are not going to actually work.
Right. Yeah, can you give me a definition of grassroots? What would qualify as that?
Well, the demand for more grassroots participation takes many forms. One is primaries that I've talked about. Another is more and more direct democracy. So, you know, more ballot initiatives, referendums, and that sort of thing. But the trouble with them is that they get people to pick things that are not actually in their interest. So, for example, if you ask American voters, should we have a tax cut, any tax cut, even get rid of the estate tax, which almost nobody pays, only, you know, states above $20 million, they'll say yes. But if you say, should we have a tax cut if it means getting rid of prescription drugs for seniors, they'll say no.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's going on there is, in the second case, they're discounting their preference for a tax cut by their preference for prescription drugs for seniors. And that's what parties do, is bundle all these issues, discounting everything they're proposing by everything else they're proposing, and then try to come up with a platform that most voters will actually vote for. If you have lots of ballot initiatives, you get something like Proposition 13 in California. It's, you know, should we cap property taxes at 1% of assessed value? People say, yeah, you know, but the fact that this is going to decimate California schools and local government services is not it's not in front of them. It's the same reason, by the way, that you can get, you know, a majority of British voters to vote yes for leaving Europe, even though they elect political parties that are overwhelmingly against leaving Europe, because the parties are doing the bundling, the discounting. They know that if Britain leaves Europe, many things that their supporters want will be, many things that they want will be compromised, and they'll be worse off. So that's another form of grassroots politics. It feels good, lets people vote on every issue. You know, now they can do it on the internet or vote on their phones, topic by topic, issue by issue. But that's not the way you're going to get government that's actually going to address America's problems in a feasible and responsible way going forward. And for that, you need to strengthen the political parties, not weaken them.
Ian Shapiro, a co-author on the book Responsible Parties, Saving Democracy from Itself. We'll continue our conversation with him. Some of the ideas he thinks could improve the electoral process. He's not a big fan of the whole grassroots movement. He says that efforts to decentralize political decision-making have made governments and especially political parties less effective. So what are his solutions? We'll talk to him about that next. Welcome back to Overnight America. There's this new book out called Responsible Parties, Saving Democracy from Itself. Political theorist Ian Shapiro argues that devolving power to the grassroots is not the solution. It's part of the problem. What has he got against grassroots? But we'll continue our conversation with him. You know, I think when people look at the turnout numbers from the last couple of elections, it seems like it was up. It seems like more people were engaged. So I guess just me looking at it and thinking, man, that seems to me, it wasn't just some of the far left or far right or some of the fringe beliefs or the grassroots that were out there. It seems like these grassroots actually made it possible for other people to pay attention, or maybe it's almost like the same example people give when it comes to sports betting. You know, you could watch a game and not care, but yeah, if you put $100 on it, all of a sudden you care a lot. So it's almost like when you add the grassroots flavor, it seems people are more engaged in that. Maybe they're more adamant about it too. And wouldn't that also bring out more people that are for the general base that isn't grassroots?
Well, turnout was not up in the primaries, and it was a little bit up on the Republican side in the general election. It was somewhat, you know, over 08 and 012, it was down on the Democratic side. Mm. So we certainly, you know, people have big megaphones, and of course, social media amplifies the impression of turnout. You can get very big crowds. Both Sanders and Trump could get lots of people to show up at stadiums. But actually, turnout in the general election was not remarkably high.
Yeah, because that's just my general impression. Like, I lived in Indiana during the presidential election, and Indiana was a huge battleground state towards the end there with Trump and Cruz, and everyone was very active. It was a high voter turnout. And even here in Missouri during the last primary that was just in November of last year, it seemed like we had somewhere between 40 and 50% when it came to voter turnout, which is a lot higher than I remember the last primary being, because it doesn't seem like there was enough on the ballot to get people all worked up about it. Let me point one other thing out, too. Just generally in radio, it seems like whenever there's these hot topic people, the Ocasio-Cortezes of the world, the Donald Trumps of the world, the Bernie Sanders of the world, it's very good for fodder, because when you bring it up in something that they talked about, it gets a lot of people worked up. A lot of people get to their phones and they want to talk, comment about it, talk about it. It seems like talk radio always benefits from these big grassroots efforts. And I think a lot of television networks do, too. They really lean into something like that.
Well, yeah, and, you know, we have very siloed communication, so they have very different demographics, these stations. So obviously, you know, Hannity speaks to his constituency, and MSNBC speak to their constituency. But I just want to come back to your point about Indiana, which is one of the big problems, that, and the reason primaries have become so much more important, is that the vast majority of seats now are safe seats. Primaries have been around for more than 100 years, but now that more than 90% of the seats in Congress are safe seats, it makes the primaries much more important, because the general election is unimportant. And in presidential elections, as you said, there's a very small number of battleground states. So electoral competition is very intense in those states. But, you know, in California, in New York, you know, it's between them that, you know, it's a huge, millions and millions and millions of people. There's nothing up for grabs in the general election, because at the presidential level, the result is preordained. Same thing, you know, in Texas, for the most part, Florida. So the only elections that matter are the primaries. And so then you're going to get very distorted turnout, as I said, mostly toward the fringes of the parties dominating the outcomes in most of America. And so what we get is people going to Washington who are not remotely representative of even of their parties, never mind of the American electorate.
Mm-hmm. Responsible Parties is the name of the book, Saving Democracy from Itself. Ian Shapiro joining us. So what are some of your solutions if really outside of changing the political system, or would you change the way that we vote in order to try to adjust for some of the problems you're seeing?
Well, so I'll just mention a couple. One is that what we argue is that if turnout in a primary falls below 75% of the turnout in the previous general election in that district or state, then the selection should be discarded, and the congressional parties should pick the candidate.
Oh.
Because the parties in Congress have an incentive to pick people who can both win in their district and support a coherent national program. Another solution, which a lot of the states have begun adopting, is to move district drawing away from state legislatures. Because if it's a state legislature, if it's dominated by one party, they'll create safe seats for themselves. Or if there's divided party control, they'll tend to carve up the state into state seats, just make deals. Mm-hmm. What we really want is independent commissions that will draw districts to be competitive. Every district should have some rural voters in it and some urban voters in it. So rural voters have to consider the interests of urban voters, and urban voters have to consider the interests of rural voters, and you get elected people who are going to worry about melding those interests. Likewise, at the presidential level, if turnout falls below some threshold, we think the congressional leaders should then pick the presidential candidates. Not smoke-filled rooms, not party grandees, but we really want political parties that can operate as teams, all pulling the same direction. And the way you do that is to empower the congressional parties to have a bigger say in the selection of candidates. And then the candidates will have a big say in the selection of party leaders. So it'd be more like, you know, in a sports team, you give a lot of power to the quarterback and the manager. But if they don't deliver, they're gone. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, they have enough rope to hang themselves, if you like. And it would make our system operate more like a parliamentary system, where the president would be more like a prime minister. In fact, we used to have that system, you know, until 1828. The congressional parties chose the presidential candidates, and Andrew Jackson attacked that. It was the first populist attack on the existing system, and that's how we got party conventions.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
You know, when you mentioned a couple of the solutions, aren't you concerned that the people that do show up to the polls during the elections, you're disenfranchising their vote?
How do you mean?
So if they actually go in and they pull the lever for someone, and then after the fact, let's say it doesn't meet the threshold, the percentage threshold, and then they find out, well, their vote actually didn't matter. It's just going to go to someone else that was voted in to make the decision for them. So actually their vote doesn't count.
Well, perhaps, but, you know, why should the presidential candidate be chosen by 5% of the electorate? As I said, everyone says give more power to the people, but the question is which people? And if you're giving a lot of power to highly unrepresentative people, I'll just give you one other example. We're not the only country that's doing this. For instance, in Britain, they've gone to direct election of party leaders, and the members of the parties are, again, towards the fringe. So you can have, in the British Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, who's way to the left of the typical Labour voter, never mind the typical British voter, gets elected leader. The Parliamentary Labour Party votes by 172-40, no confidence in him, because they know they could never support a program that he wants and get reelected in their district. And then the membership reelects him by 62%. So if you now imagine Labour coming into office, which they might well because the Tories have made a mess of Brexit and so forth, imagine how can they possibly govern when most of the parliamentary Labour Party can't support what their prime minister will be running on. And so they have done something very similar to us. They took a system that actually was pretty functional, and they've made it dysfunctional by increasing the grassroots control of the selection of the leader of the party. But, you know, I come back to, you know, why have people who are so wildly unrepresentative? In fact, the Parliamentary Labour Party represents Labour voters and British voters much better than the activists who show up and pay their £3 to be members. So, you want to say, you know, when you say more power to the people, it's always got to be which people?
Mm. You know, if people want to check out your thoughts, your book, Responsible Party, Saving Democracy from Itself, where can they find it?
It's at a fine bookstore near you or on Amazon. You can find it heavily discounted if you've got Amazon Prime.
Oh.
And, you can get it now, I think, for under $10.
Oh, wow, that's great. It's an interesting thought. It's an exercise too to look at some ways to change the system. Maybe we upgrade the cookies and coffee that they normally put out. The volunteers at the polling places can draw more people, or that might help. Scratch and sniff stickers too.
All of the things we propose would not require constitutional amendments. They're perfectly feasible, and they would greatly improve American politics.
Political theorist Ian Shapiro, a Sterling professor of political science at Yale University. Responsible Parties is the name of the book, Saving Democracy from Itself. Thank you so much for the interesting conversation.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, anytime. He joins us on the Quiver River Electric Guest Line. There's some pretty radical thoughts there, but still, it's a fun thought exercise. I wonder if he pushes his students over at Yale to go through these same exercises. Something he believes in for sure. Worth hearing out. You know, I was going to do the whole NFL lawsuit deal with the New Orleans Saints season ticket holders. Maybe I'll save that right after midnight, because coming up next, I'm just in the mood for some silly music. Did you see that the new Lego movie came out with their theme song? And they say it may be one of the most catchy songs of all time. I'm going to ask producer Mike Anderson if he thinks this is the most catchy song of all time, and you're going to hear it for yourself next on Overnight America, KMOX.
Overnight America and Ryan Recker continues on KMOX.
You know, this is a catchy song. It's not the most catchy song, but it's a catchy song. Producer Mike Anderson, did you see the original Lego movie when it came out? It was really good. Really, really entertaining. I don't know if our kid has seen it, but there's a Lego 2 movie coming out. One of the appeals of the original Lego movie, and I wanted to reiterate this. Yes, my kid was crying, bawling his eyes out earlier to a movie called Sergeant Stubby, based on a true story. It's a cartoon rated G, but it's based on a true story of a pit bull back in World War I that was part of a service dog, you know, went out there and fought with the troops, was injured, came back, was like a national hero, a little Stubby. And they made a movie, a cartoon about this dog, and what ended up happening was they show the scene where during the war, the bomb goes off and the dog looks like it's dead. And my poor kid started bawling his eyes out thinking like, oh, well, why would you show me this? This is terribly sad. He was emotionally connected to Sergeant Stubby. Well, what ends up happening is, of course, the dog survives and he comes back and he's this hero and whatever. So that was a little rude awakening for my kid. Like, wait until you see Toy Story 3, son. And at the end of that, you and every other adult will be crying your eyes out. Or if you want to watch the saddest movie of all time, Hachi. Doesn't get sadder than Hachi. So that led to a discussion at the dinner table because my wife was sharing this story. This happened when I was napping for the show earlier. And we started talking about if dogs go to heaven. And my wife says dogs go to heaven. I say dogs do not go to heaven. And that became quite a dinner time tale in front of the kid. She's like, don't say that in front of our kid that you believe that. I'm like, no, I do. I don't think dogs go to heaven. So we had quite the debate over the dinner table. Quite the debate. And maybe you feel that way. Maybe we can take calls on that later. But I was talking about children's movies, and we found out that the Lego 2 movie is soon to come out, the second part. And man, does it look cool. Just like the original one looked cool. So do you remember the theme song, producer Mike Anderson? Everything is awesome. You ever heard this?
Everything no. Is cool when you're
part of the team. Catchy, isn't
Everything
it?
No. Is
awesome when we're living our
dream. Awful. Everything is better when we sleep together. Are the kids raving? I don't get it.
It's like they only play this one song in this little Lego universe. This is the only song they play on the radio. Gets them all pumped up, hyped up, and everyone loves it. Even people that say they hate it love it. All right, so Lego 2 had to come up with a song that was catchier than that.
Shouldn't be.
And they brought in a comedian that also does some music, John LaJoie. Do you know him? He was on The League. Mm-hmm. He played Taco or Paco or something.
Yep.
Yeah, so he created this song. It's called Catchy Song. Get stuck inside your head. What do you think of this song? It's called This Song Is Gonna Get Stuck in Your Head. The lyrics over and over and over and over again.
It's better than the first one.
You think so? That's pretty catchy.
Definitely catchier.
All right, I got a bunch of catchy songs. I want to get your general impression of some of these catchy songs. Maybe this one. Well, they're not necessarily catchy.
They just get stuck in your head?
Yeah, I put together some of the most annoying songs that could get stuck in your head.
All right.
You ever heard this one?
Nope.
It's a very popular meme online. It's a cat head with a Pop-Tart body, and it's kind of like...
Oh, yeah,
floating
flying?
Through space. Yeah, flying.
Okay, I guess I have. In shorter form.
Pretty annoying. Pretty catchy, huh?
I prefer the one of the cat playing piano. Piano cat, I think.
Oh, that's a pretty good one. How about this one?
Yeah, that's a great one. This reminds me of grade school picnics.
Or dances. All the girls on one side and all the boys on the other side. Come on, everybody. Do the Macarena. Get out on the dance floor.
Oh, we were mixing it up.
Wait, you guys weren't shy when you were in grade school?
No, our class loved each other.
Wow.
Shout out, St. Sabina class of 2004.
That's right. I mean, I'm a lot older than you. In the 90s, it was... Guys were too afraid to go out and dance.
I grew up in the 90s, too.
Well, you weren't going to dances in the 90s, were you? No, can't do it. All right, how about this annoying song? You into this one, too? Was this at your dance? Might have been.
Wolf from Gangnam Style. No, that was too late. I think I was already in college.
Yeah, and this song comes out. It's at, I think, 3 billion views on YouTube, the most viewed video of all time.
Very sad for the human race.
And then we found out the guy hates America, and, you know, not that anyone liked him to begin with. How about this one? Early internet.
I've never heard this, but I really like this one.
Is this your favorite so far?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Apparently, this was an old-timey song that they sped up, and it sounded, you know, kind of cool sounding.
I'm going to set this to my ringtone.
Ding, dong, ding, dong,
ding. I'll set this to the callback tone so that people hear it when they call me.
We were trying to come up with some bumper music for the fill-in guests in the future. That could be one of them. How about this last annoying song?
With a baseball bat.
You remember this one?
Oh, yeah. Not way yet.
No,
way
you
yet,
don't know
way
this
yet,
song.
Way yet. Now, there you go. There you go. There you go. There you go. There's peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, you know this too well. All right. Any of those songs more annoying than the Lego catchy song? All right. So if you had to pick the most annoying of all those, which one would you pick?
Probably the first Lego movie song was the worst.
You think so? Does anyone like this? Because get ready. Once this movie comes out and you got young kids, if they go to see this, this is all they're going to want to listen to. You know, you're going to be in the car and from the back seat, they're going to say, hey, Dad, play this song. And then you're going to pick them up from school. Then they're going to say, hey, play this song. And then they're going to say, hey, do the throwback song. And then they're going to say, oh, play that one I like again. Over and over and over again for a month. I really don't know. You know what this is really needs? It needs one of those dance compilations that they put their own music underneath. This would be great for one of those. It's stuck inside your head. So the comedian songwriter that wrote this said that everything is awesome is the bar. You can't get any better than that. Sets the bar for being annoyingly catchy. And he said there was no way to top it. What did he decide to do? He decided to amp it up even further. If you can't beat them, join them. Go even further if you can. He apologized for a future in which kids demand to hear the song. Sorry, parents. And I'm totally not saying this with a diabolical grin on my face. Of course he is. Whew. Director Mike Mitchell admits it was challenging to listen to the song over and over and over again, mostly because when you're in the editing floor, that you have to listen to it. Like you're in the room, you're in the process, you have to work on all these things. It says, in the editing room, I watched it over and over and over. It drills itself into your head, and that's all you can hear is something like this. And then when you lay down at night, you put your head on the pillow after a long day of work, and you're just about to fall asleep, you're in the car and you think you're finally going to be able to escape that song, and then we're playing it on KMOX. These kids are going to love it. Parents are going to hate it. Totally get it. Totally get it. Oh, real quick, let me bring in Mike calling in. Hey, Mike, what's going on?
Hi, John. I heard you talk about dogs don't go to heaven.
Yeah.
And I want to set you straight. You're wrong.
I don't think they do.
I'll prove it. I'm going to prove it. And okay. It'll make sense. Now, number one, innocent baby, which is sad when they die, they go straight to heaven. Mm-hmm. God is a compassionate God because they can't repent. They're innocent.
Okay.
And just like a dog or a cat, like the dog you got at home you love, okay, they don't have no soul. But it, and the part in the Bible talks about the lions, will you be able to lay down? I wouldn't want to lay down by a lion now, but in heaven it'll be peaceful. They won't bother you. But see, what the point is, God loves people, but he also loves animals enough to know that heaven would be so great that it would surprise you. But in that case, since they don't have a soul, the animals would automatically go there because they're innocent like a baby. Now, if you're a human, you can repent. That's a different story. But them songs, you know, so I didn't care for any of them songs.
I know. No, we only got a couple of seconds here, but what I think is that, I guess in your analogy, are mosquitoes in heaven too? Like everything that was ever living on this planet that was innocent has a chance at making it to heaven?
They will, because they don't have a soul. And see, God's compassion, nothing's impossible. But tell you one song, since you don't have much, you ought to play. I didn't like either of them songs that much. Have you ever heard of the Funky Chicken?
No, I'm going to have to look it up, though. Or maybe I won't. All right, do dogs get into heaven? Maybe we'll ask that question coming up. Hey, thanks, Mike. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.